You know, sometimes despite our best intentions, things just don't work. And that was the case, wasn't it, with the Wayback Music Machine yesterday? It just would not start. I don't know what happened.
I think we needed some an oil change.
Well, you know, I did take it in for an oil change last night, and we should be good. So today we've got an interesting trip. We're going to be going from west to east, aren't we? We're starting in Hawthorne, California, heading to New York, and then heading over to London to finish the trip. So that should be excellent.
And we are not bringing any gremlins with us. We had too many of them yesterday. Thank you very much.
No, exactly. The machine is purring like a kitten. So I'm ready to go. Are you?
I'm so ready. And we're all working. So let's roll.
All right. Road trip time. Maps?
Check.
Snacks?
Double check.
Tunes?
Check.
I'm Tony Stewart.
I'm Aaron Badgley.
And we are cruising the rock and roll highway in our Wayback Music Machine. Are you ready, my friend?
I sure am.
I have the feeling this is going to be the start of a great adventure.
Kind of a magical mystery tour.
Somehow I knew you were going to say that. Oh, it's so nice when the Wayback Machine is working properly. So I think we have to go to Hawthorne, California first, don't we? August 3rd, 1963?
We do indeed. So let me see if everything's working. I should be able to set the dials and go. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's fingers crossed.
Hey, and toes. Ready.
Okay, let's jump. Well, here we are, August 3rd, 1963 in Hawthorne, California. And you know, I love when we go back to California in the 60s, don't you?
I really like these striped t-shirts. Yes.
Yeah, me too. You know, and I like the whole vibe. And
I do too.
And I'm sure it's going to be no surprise to people when they hear that we're going to Hawthorne, that we're talking about the Beach Boys.
Well, they basically started the whole surf music, right? I mean, I know there was a couple of surf songs prior to them, but really they made it huge, right?
Oh, absolutely. And so here we're actually, this is when they released Surfer Girl. And it is the first song that Brian Wilson ever wrote and the first one that he got full production credits for. So I find that interesting.
Yeah, and I was reading up, I mean, apparently, and this should not come as a surprise, but, you know, he had written other songs as a teenager and all that kind of stuff. But the first serious song that the Beach Boys would record that he wrote, and Tony, I think he's a genius. Like, I know there's some problems and things happen with him and all that kind of stuff, but, man, when he was in the early 60s, I'm sorry, he was one of the best.
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I think the genius label totally applies to Brian Wilson. This is also from the Surfer Girl album, and it's their third album, and he was given the sole credit for producing the album. So, testament to him, but it did pretty well too, didn't it, Surfer Girl?
Well, number seven, and it was on the charts for over a year, so...
And you know what? The B-side is actually one of my favorite Beach Boys songs.
Isn't it funny to see what's on the B-side? But I mean, Little Deuce Coupe is probably more of a known song by them these days than Surfer Girl.
Yeah, I think so, actually. And I love Little Deuce Coupe. I love those old car songs, actually. I'm a car guy.
Yeah, me too. Do you like the death songs too, where people get into car crashes?
Well, sometimes, you know, those
are... that was a weird fad.
Oh, it certainly was. But I think I just like the car songs a little bit better, though.
Yeah, me too. But the Surfer Girl was actually written, well, the lyrics were inspired by Judy Bowles, his first serious girlfriend, who he dated for 3.5 years. And this is, I thought you'd find this interesting, is that the song is melodically based on When You Wish Upon a Star.
Yeah, and you know, I went back and listened to it a few times, and you can hear it. Like, yeah. You wouldn't realize just listening to the song by itself, but then when you compare them, like, oh. But the Beach Boys had a habit of liberally using other tunes. I mean, you know, the whole Chuck Berry incident, right, with Sweet Little 16, and that certainly, Chuck wasn't too happy about that.
I like your use of the word liberally. Some would say plagiarism, but you know, I wouldn't say that. I just
yeah, homage, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, Chuck was not impressed. But you know, besides that, I mean, you know, for me, Pet Sounds and Surf Stop, those two albums, man, are just priceless.
Oh, absolutely. And well, Pet Sounds certainly threw down the gauntlet, right, for the Beatles. They saw Pet Sounds and they heard Pet Sounds and like, okay, we've got to up our game here.
Yeah, absolutely. And they did. I mean, that's why we got Revolver and then Pepper, right? So, but yeah, Brian Wilson, Surfer Girl, classic. And I was lucky to see the Beach Boys in concert with Wilson before he, I mean, this is back in the, what year would it have been? Late 70s, early 80s? I can't remember now, but they were good. It was good to see them. Nowadays, Mike Love just is not enough to carry the band.
No, that's true, eh? But back in the day, boy, they were on. Like when you listen to those and live recordings, no auto-tune, of course. So their harmonies are all natural, right? They're having to harmonize with each other. And I love that era of music, actually.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Well, it's an extension of doo-wop, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we were just talking about a track off air, but Silk Sonic, that project that Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak are doing.
I love that. So good, yeah.
I absolutely love that project, too. And I hope they continue that for a long time because they just released a new track. And, you know, I like talking about new music when it's good new music. And they have a follow-up to Leave the Door Open. And their second track is called Skate, and what a throwback tune. What a wonderful song, and great harmonies, and everything about it, just awesome.
Well, I like, too, that they're kind of doing the old school, releasing a couple of singles before the album comes out. I really think that's very cool, too.
Oh, I love the whole vibe, and even, you know, the outfits and everything. It's fantastic. I was showing that to Cynthia yesterday, and yeah, she loved it. You know, I hope they tour, and I hope they come out my way for sure.
I would go to Ottawa, but I hope to see them in Toronto, or you and I always come here. We can hang out here too, but I'll come to Ottawa too, Montreal even.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this week on the charts though, what was on the charts on August 3rd, 63?
Well, you got number five is the Safaris with Wipeout with a great laugh at the beginning and the terrific drumming. Love that song. Elvis Presley, the Jordanaires with You're the Devil in Disguise at four. Jan and Dean, another surf song, Surf City, at number three with Jan and Dean. Number two is Little, Stevie Wonder. He was, what, 12 when he put this out?
Yeah, about 12, I think. Incredible. Yeah,
Fingertips, which is classic. And number one, The Times, So Much in Love.
Well, what an interesting chart. You can see the surf music creeping in there. And
yeah.
But then, you know, you get Little Stevie Wonder. What a talent. Well, you know my admiration for him.
Oh, yeah. I my biggest regret is not seeing him when he played here in Toronto when he did the Songs in the Key of Life tour, and he just did that album. I don't know what was the reason I couldn't go, but I couldn't go, and I just kicked myself.
Well, you know what? We've all got a few concerts like that, don't we, that we really wish we could have gone to. I've got some, too. But we're going to jump now to the East Coast, and we're going to stay on August 3rd, but we're going to go ahead 11 years to 1974, and we're going to be talking about a Canadian icon. Are you ready for this?
I don't know if anyone's ready for this, but I'm ready. Here we go.
Yeah, such an interesting story. All right, plug it in and let's jump. Thank you for listening to this podcast. We'd like to just take a moment to suggest another one that you might like.
The Essence of Cool is a fantastic podcast that gives you a behind-the-scenes look at music, some interesting guests, some great conversation, and we had the privilege of throwing the host out of our van.
Oh, that's right, back in our inaugural episode. Essence of Cool is hosted by Bernard Fraser, and each episode he's got fascinating guests, great stories, and he's got a fantastic ability to bring out the best in whoever he's talking with, doesn't he?
And tuck and roll. He does a fantastic tuck and roll.
That's right. So check out his show, folks. It's theessenceofcool.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I can't wait to check out his next episode. And now, let's get back to our road trip.
We're in one of my favorite cities on August 3rd, 1974, here in New York City. But we just had a little promo there from Bernard Fraser, right?
We did, for his excellent podcast called The Essence of Cool. And actually, you were a guest on there. I enjoyed your interview a lot.
Oh, thank you. You know, it's doing the podcast with you is so easy, but then when I heard myself with Bernard, I just was cringing. So I'm looking forward to next week, I believe, or next episode, which is you, right?
Yeah, I'm his guest. I'm the wrap-up for the cleanup hitter, I guess, you know, if you want to go
That's
baseball.
That's quite an honor, man. That's quite an honor.
I feel like I'm the least qualified of all the guests on there, but...
I disagree entirely. That's not true at all. Not true at all.
But a great show, folks, so give it a listen. But here we are, August 3rd, 74, New York City. And, you know, I just noticed a coincidence. You're going to New York City on August 3rd, 2021, in a few days.
Oh, I know. Isn't that? And your wife's there now. And she'll be back on August 3rd, 2021. So
yeah.
That's a big day, Tony.
It is. So August 3rd, are you a fan of The Boss? Do you like Springsteen?
You know, I'm a huge fan of The Boss. I have, I think, all of his records except all the live stuff that's come out, but I love him. Love him very much.
Oh, me too. And, you know, normally The Boss is the headliner, right? And he's one of the biggest acts in the world. But on August 3rd, 74, he was the opener for a Canadian icon. And I wonder if people can guess who Springsteen opened for. It's, I don't think they will. Nope, but so I'll let you. Who did he open for?
Well, so there was a festival called the Schaefer Festival in New York at a place called Woman Skating Rink.
This is great, by the way. I love that. Just the skating rink show.
Yeah. The skating rink. Yeah. You know what, Tony? This is truly a Spinal Tap moment.
Oh, absolutely.
So the main act, the headliner for that night in that festival, was none other than our own songbird herself, Anne Murray.
Yeah.
And the opening act, she had two opening acts. One was Brewer and Shipley, who had that one hit, their one hit wonder, One Toke Over the Line.
Yes, which is a great song.
And Springsteen opened the whole concert, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. And he opened it with Jungle Land.
I find that I love Jungle Land. It's one of my favorite Springsteen tracks, but I find that such an odd song to open with.
Well, and can you imagine the crowd? They must
like this.
They're there to see Anne Murray sing Snowbird or whatever this, you know, that one. And here's Springsteen doing Jungle Land. I would love to see a film of this, the crowd. I'd love to see that.
Oh, me too. Especially because Jungle Land is what, like clocks in at what, 7-8 minutes at least?
Yeah. Hey, go big or go home, right?
Well, that's right. But speaking of going big, you know, Anne Murray, you've got to admire what she did for Canadian women musicians. I mean, like her or hate her. And I remember growing up watching Anne Murray. You know, my folks liked her. My grandparents loved her. But the first Canadian woman to hit number one on the U.S. charts and the first to have a gold record. She had a gold record with Snowbird in 1970. Amazing.
And she did something close to my heart. She sang "Oh Canada" at the first American League baseball game played in Toronto for the Toronto Blue Jays. She, you know what? I'm with you. Now, growing up, of course, it was not cool to like Anne Murray.
No, absolutely not. But
what was that song she had in the 80s? "You Needed Me." That was a good song.
Yeah. And "You and Me." Do you remember that song? That was a big hit.
Yeah. You know, we wouldn't have a Shania Twain. We wouldn't have all. I mean, Shania Twain even acknowledges her debt to Anne Murray.
Oh, absolutely. And she did that Monkees remake, right? "Daydream Believer."
Oh, that was huge. And she did a Beatle cover.
Yeah.
"You Won't See Me," which was a huge hit.
Yeah. And actually, it was a good cover, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, so what's the other song I'm thinking of? It's one that I sang at a wedding.
Cotton Jenny?
No. "Could I Have This Dance?" Do you remember that one?
"Could I Have This Dance?" That was huge.
But
that was huge. Yeah. I worked in country radio. We played that all the time.
Yeah. That was a big hit. But you know, there's some other things about her. I didn't realize she was such a good golfer.
Yeah. That surprised me when I saw your notes.
Yeah. So in 2007, I can't remember which golf magazine, but they named her, this is unbelievable. They named her the world's best female celebrity golfer. Now, I'm not a golfer. So, 11 handicap. Now, I'm assuming that's really good, but I don't. I know very little about golf, you know, so.
You can't see me at home, folks, but I'm shrugging. Going, I don't know.
So I'm assuming that bigger is better with handicaps in golf. I have no idea. Maybe one of our listeners can comment in Facebook and let us know, but we're betraying our own ignorance of golf here.
No, we're speaking to our working class backgrounds, Tony.
Well, you know what? I I'm a musician, right? There's no way I could take up golf. I'd be divorced for sure. That would be.
Yeah, I think if I became obsessed with anything other than record collecting, my wife would probably leave me too. But there you go.
Well, that's right. But yeah, so Anne Murray opening up, and the Boss was her opening act. I thought that was a great story, and we had to talk about that this week. Now
it's almost as bizarre as Hendrix opening for the Monkees, almost.
Oh, and speaking of Hendrix, did you hear the Joni Mitchell news?
I've heard the song. Yeah. It's fantastic. It's on YouTube.
So, well, yeah. So the news, folks, is Joni Mitchell is releasing the tapes that Hendrix made of her performing in Ottawa at Café Le Hibou. So Hendrix was in Ottawa as well, and he heard that Joni Mitchell was playing, and he was a big fan of hers. And he walked in, and they said, "Oh, Hendrix is at the door." And she went to talk to him, and he asked if he could record her show. So he went, and he was sitting right by the stage with his reel-to-reel tape recorder and taped the show. And they thought these tapes were lost forever, and they just found them. And they're releasing them. That is such a great story.
Oh, it's fantastic. And it's really good. She's amazing. This whole series she's releasing of archive material is fantastic.
Oh, I love Joni Mitchell. And, you know, Hendrix was a big fan, too. I can't remember the quote he said, you know, but he was just talking about how talented she was. And everybody who knows how to play guitar, she is the most underrated guitar player. Try duplicating what she does. You know, I don't think you could.
No. Well, her open tuning or whatever the tuning she does, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she got to the point where she actually forgot what tunings she was using on different songs. And there was a guy who he did a project where he cataloged all of Joni Mitchell's tunings, and she would have to refer to that book to know, oh, okay, yeah, I did that song in that tuning, because she had like 74 different tunings or something. Crazy. So another great Canadian musician. But back to Anne Murray here. What was on the charts this week?
Well, the charts was an interesting top five. Number five, I don't know if you remember the song. I love this song. And in fact, was just playing my original 45 the other day. Paper Lace, The Night Chicago Died.
Yeah, that's a great track. That is a great song.
Steely Dan was at number four with Ricky Don't Lose That Number. Try saying that without singing the chorus.
Yeah, that's right.
Number three was Roberta Flack with Feel Like Making Love. Number two is Elton John, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. Kind of a mellow top five. And number one, our favorite, John Denver with Annie's Song.
Yeah, that's interesting. Eh? That was a big, big hit for John Denver. So pretty eclectic list there, too.
I don't hear John Denver on the oldies channels very much. I've got to be honest with you. Like here in Toronto, we have Boom Radio. I never hear John Denver. So I'm just saying.
No, exactly. I don't hear him on the air too much either. But now, you know what, Aaron? We're sticking with August 3rd today. That's our theme. And we're going to cross the pond here and go to London, England, August 3rd, 2007. And you ready to do this?
Oh, I'm ready because our Beatle moment may be in England as well.
Well, there you go. So I've got this thing filled up with premium gas. We're ready to jump.
Smart man you are. Okay, here we go. So here we are in London. And I must say, Tony, that was a smooth drive over here. Fantastic driving.
Yeah, I think I'm finally getting the hang of this thing.
Oh, you more than got the hang of it. You're doing great. It's fantastic. And I like being the passenger so I can look at the seagulls. we're here at the Imperial College in London, and you and I are going to pick up a thesis so we can read it and later discuss it and, debate. But the thesis is titled A Survey of Radio Velocities in the Zodiacal Dust Cloud.
Well, that sounds like a little light reading, doesn't it?
Or a sleeping pill. But who wrote that?
Well, interestingly enough, Dr. Brian May wrote that. So Queen guitarist Brian May handed in his astronomy PhD thesis 36 years. Can you believe that? 36 years after abandoning that research because he joined Queen, he finally had time to finish it up and hand it in, and he was granted his PhD at the Imperial College in London. What an amazing story.
Can you imagine his parents going, you know, Bryant, finish your PhD. Don't worry about this bad queen.
Well, that's right. And so, yeah, he started his research in 1970 and abandoned it for obvious reasons. But after he got his doctorate, you know, his academic career is pretty impressive. Like, he was a chancellor in Liverpool at Liverpool John Moores University for 5 years. So pretty cool. And he's a lecturer now, isn't he? He still is lecturing to this day, I think.
Can you imagine getting your BA or whatever degree from Brian May?
Yeah, I wonder if his classes are packed, you know?
I would imagine they, I mean, and how many people even know what he's talking about? They just want to stare at him. You know?
That's right. But what an interesting guy, you know, because his guitar, right? The red, it just fits with his whole personality because he's an incredibly intelligent man. His guitar, the Red Special, he, you know, was built with his father. It was using wood from a fireplace, household items like mother of pearl buttons. Like, they built this thing. The tremolo arm was made from parts from an old bicycle saddlebag. Amazing. His Red Special. And of course he had a custom version of that Red Special made, but, such an interesting guitar player. And I play a guitar a bit. I'm a passable guitar player, not a terrific one, but, you know, he uses coins instead of a pick, which I've had to do only when I couldn't find a pick, and I find it hard to do, but he gets that certain sound that he likes by using coins. But I love his playing. I've got to say, when he was picked, you know, in that recent poll as the number one rock and roll guitarist of all time, I love Brian May's playing. That's just my opinion.
It's certainly distinct. I like it as well. I mean, I think, you know, when I hear things like We Are the Champions, I think he makes the song with a solo, or even Bohemian Rhapsody. But even things like Keep Yourself Alive and all those songs, Tie Your Mother Down, fantastic. His guitaring is just, it's distinct. It's his own style. I like the fact he uses coins. I'd love to find one of those coins. That'd be pretty cool. But it's not surprising that his dad built the guitar, because he was a draftsman at the Ministry of Aviation, right? So
yeah,
you have some knowledge about that stuff. So that's kind of cool. And his mother was, I guess, just a stay-at-home mom, right?
Yeah, but, you know, smart guy, right? I mean, he went and did his mathematics and physics at Imperial College, and then got his Bachelor of Science with honors, of course. And
of course.
But, you know, just decided to leave the band. And like you say, I wonder what his parents would have thought, you know, whether they were supportive of that or not, because what a decision and a shock decision, I'm sure, to everybody, right?
Well, and it's still funny that he, you know, all those years later, you have to admire someone who sees something through, even if it takes 36 years. I mean, I'm still working on my budget from 1992 for work, but that's neither here nor there. But, you know, he saw it through, right? It took him 3.5 decades when he did it, right?
Well, that's right. Now, I'm going to, you know, just say one more thing about his guitar playing, and just from a musician's perspective. Another thing I like about Brian May's guitar playing is that he doesn't feel the need to fill in every microsecond with riffs. You know, you hear some of these guitarists who've got incredible technique, and Brian May would be the first guy to tell you there's lots of guys who can shred Rings Around Me. But tasteful playing always. And for me, that wins out over shredding every time. You know, I can put up with shredding for a minute or two, but as soon as I hear that going on, I'm out, even from a jazz perspective, because it comes across sometimes as very self-indulgent, you know? So I love his solos because they're musical.
They're melodic.
Yeah, exactly.
They're melodic. He creates a melody with his guitar solos, which is, you know, very few guitarists do. I agree with you about shredding. I mean, you listen to half a dozen heavy metal bands. That's all they do. He creates a melody, and it's a beautiful structure. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Beautiful playing. Now, 2007, I was really interested in finding out what was going on the charts, because 2007, right, were Apple iTunes era. So what was on the charts?
Well, you know, it's funny because it reminded me of my daughter's children, like when they were kids, because they were listening to more commercial radio than I was. Number five was Shop Boys, not the Pet Shop Boys, who I love, but Shop Boys, Party Like a Rockstar. I don't know. Timbaland featuring Carrie Hilson, The Way I Are. Man, that's good grammar. number three, Rihanna featuring Jay-Z with Umbrella, or should I pronounce it Umbrella?
That's right. Ella, Ella, Ella. Yeah.
Ella, Ella. Fergie, number two with Big Girls Don't Cry. And number one is a song I love.
Me too.
Did you really?
Yeah. I actually attempted to learn this on the guitar. I liked it so much. So, yeah.
Hey There, Delilah. Yeah. Can I tell you a quick, very funny story? I took my daughter to see them, Emily, my eldest daughter. We went to see Plain White Tees. It was our first ever concert. And they were signing autographs at the beginning of the show before the show started. And they were so lovely to the little girl. They were so great to my daughter.
Awesome.
They spent time with her. They signed posters. They talked to her, had pictures. They were really lovely guys. So it was nice seeing them at number one. And an artist that you and I both love, Amy Winehouse, was at number 18 that week with the song that had peaked at number 9 called Rehab.
Yeah. Sad, you know, the circumstances around that song, but great song, boy.
Oh, fantastic song. Yep.
But, you know, the Plain White Tees, I was mentioning I had started that, learning that song on guitar. Well, maybe 36 years from now when I'm finished, I'll play it. You know?
when I get my budget in and I'm with you there, Tony. I'm with you there.
Well, this has been an excellent trip, but I'm ready to head back to 2021. What about you?
I think we need to do a detour for the Beatle moment.
We do. That's why I'm excited about heading back. So let's head back and then we'll find out what the Beatles were up to, because we were talking about this before. I mean, when we're researching this show, there's a Beatles thing for every day of the year. Well, there's multiple Beatles things, right? So
yeah.
And we all know, you and I like to say all roads lead back to the Beatles. So let's jump to the present and find out what the Beatles were up to. Well, here we are back in 2021. Aaron, what was the coolest thing about this road trip today for you? What was the, you know, maybe the thing you learned that you were like, oh?
I think Brian Wilson. I think that was the biggest aha moment. The other two are kind of weird, like Springsteen, but Brian Wilson, really, that was a big wow, you know? How about you?
Well, I thought the fact that Anne Murray, being basically a professional golfer, was very, very cool. You know, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I forgot about that. Yeah.
But you know what? We should find out what the Beatles were up to, because all roads lead back to the Fab Four. So I'm going to cue up Rick's Stinger here, and I can't wait to see what you've got.
There was an awful lot going on August 3rd. So two things, Tony, for Beatles. First thing is, in 1971, Paul McCartney announced the formation of his new group Wings, which featured his wife Linda and former Moody Blues guitarist Denny Lane. There was two other members, Henry McCulloch and the drummer, whose name just went straight out of my head. But there was a band called Wings, and they started, and then they'd go on to have numerous hits in the 1970s. But the big thing in 63, August 3rd, and this is kind of weird, I think, is that the Beatles played their last ever performance at the Cavern Club.
Yes.
And at that point, they actually performed When I'm 64, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But there's a coincidence. You know what it is, don't you?
I do, because August 3rd is also the date that they played their first ever Cavern Club show, right? What year was that?
Well, that would have been 1961 with the Quarrymen, right?
Yeah. But, you know, amazing, isn't it? That first and last shows played all on August 3rd. I love stuff like that.
Well, you talk about cosmic. I mean, the fact that they and I don't think it was a conscious thing, because I don't know that they knew that the show they did on August 3rd was going to be their last at the Cavern, because they didn't know, you know, what was going to happen, right? I mean, they knew they were getting bigger, but who knew that, you know, this was going to explode? And, you know, according to John Lennon, you know, there's crowds for that show. But they went on sale July 21st at 1:30 p.m. and sold out in 30 minutes, which people today are going to go, 30 minutes? Folks, remember, this was people lining up and having to buy a piece of paper. They couldn't go online or the telephone. So 30 minutes is pretty fast if you think about it.
Well, yeah, exactly. And they did When I'm 64 at the final performance because the power went out, right? So just
see those gremlins, Tony. But you see, good things come from it like that. Like When I'm 64. I love, too bad no one taped that, eh?
Oh, exactly. But, you know, the other thing that's cool about that is I had no idea that When I'm 64 was written that early, right?
Well, it was written before that. McCartney wrote that when he was 16. Playing his dad's piano, and he just kind of hit upon it and played it. Yeah, it's incredible, eh?
Oh, it's amazing. So today was all about coincidences, folks.
August 3rd, man. Great day.
Well, that's right. Well, Aaron, a fantastic road trip as usual, and I'm glad that the Wayback Music Machine was working flawlessly today. What a relief after yesterday's misadventures.
Yeah, two thumbs up. Well, it was the weather. I'll blame the weather.
I think so. But you know what? I'm looking forward to next time. And I'm looking forward to in a couple of weeks when we're going to record live in person again. So that'll be fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm so excited about that. And maybe if I time it right, I can see you perform live.
Oh, yeah. That'll be awesome. That'll be great.
That's my goal.
All right. See you next week, my friend. Have a great trip to New York City.
Thank you. And you take good care of yourself.
Music for today's episode of the Wayback Music Machine podcast was written by Rick Denis. The show notes, chart selection, and Spotify playlist were created by Aaron Badgley.
And the artwork, recording, editing, and sound production was done by Tony Stewart. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to tell a friend or two. And don't forget to click follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast player to get the latest episodes automatically.
And we'd love it if you would leave us a review. You can also engage with the show by going on our website and leaving us a voicemail. We may even play your voicemail on an upcoming episode.
Thanks for taking this road trip with us, and we'll see you next time on the Wayback Music Machine podcast.
Hey, turn the radio up. I love this song. The Wayback Music Machine podcast is a Stewie Tunes production.